Toast.
Toast.
Right here. Right now. The most important thing in life will always be the
Movie Squad.
Salute me, familia.
Welcome to the Movie Squad podcast. My name is Tristan Fidler.
And my name is Simon Murato.
This is the official RTRFM podcast where we share our weekly edition of Movie Chat, as heard on Breakfast with Pam every Friday morning, 7:30 a.m. on RTRFM 92.1. And we cover, you know, streaming releases, cinema releases. These two films are out in cinemas at the time of recording, and they offer a few different pleasures in the wake of last week's episode talking about Barbenheimer. We've got something that takes us to World War II and to the last days of Nazi occupation of Finland with the film that you start, well, you look at, Simon.
Yes, Sisu in the second half of this episode. We ride the seesaw of Sisu, and I think we've got a few more things to say about it after we replay our conversation with Pam. But first, we do have to talk about a new Australian horror film, Tristan, that is actually taking international markets by storm.
That's right. And it's it does, you know, look to with the fact that it was acquired at Sundance Film Festival and had a lot of kind of festival buzz that, Australian films are becoming kind of marketable, profitable, and definitely horror films as well. But we look at a film called Talk to Me, which is the debut of twin brothers who are best known as YouTube creators, Raka Raka. But this is their first feature film, and I think bodes well for their career. A horror film about what happens when you intentionally play seance with the dead with your best buddies on a Friday night. This is the film Talk to Me.
Have you seen the group chat? They're doing it again tonight.
No.
Please. It's my mum's Remembrance Day. I just want to forget about it.
Who's up?
I'll do it.
Cannot go for more than 90 seconds. Am I clear?
What happens after 90 seconds?
Don't want to stay. Light the candle to open the door. Blow it out to close it. Put your hand on it. Now say, talk to me.
Very, very exciting because it's 7:30. It means it's time to go to the movies. Every Friday on Breakfast, we take some time for the cinematic arts and look into the brains of the film fanatics, the blockbuster babies, the feature flick fellows. I've put a question mark next to that, so I'm not sure about that one. They're laughing
But not blockbuster babies. That's interesting.
I like blockbuster babies. Simon Marauder and Tristan Fidler, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Pam. Tristan reminded me last week that there was a period of time where we went by the Gemini Men. Oh. That was a nickname.
The Gemini Men?
Yes.
That's a flag and a half if I've ever seen.
Yeah, neither of us are Gemini, but it was...
Oh, no, I, well...
Are you a Gemini?
Yeah, yeah. Born in June.
So wow.
There you go.
You think you know someone after all these years.
I don't want to cast aspersions on, certain star signs, but that's a flag, babe.
Oh, well, I mean, flags are useful at the beach. Look, not all flags are red, let's just say that. We're still basking in the box office glow of Barbenheimer, which we talked about last week, and the box office results and the great success. Well, both films did very well, but Barbie in particular in terms of, like, breaking records for a female-directed movie. And you finally saw it as well.
You've caught up, Simon.
I did catch up. Saw it Friday night at a literally packed cinema. So much so, my wife and I had to sit in separate aisles,
which is funny but awful.
Yeah, look, we were fine with it, but it was really funny. Like, it was, as you two built up and as the community has rallied around Barbie, it is a really funny, really silly comedy, and it is kind of surface level with how it deals with a lot of the heady themes, but the sheer volume of what it's dealing with, I don't think it can go much deeper. But I appreciated that. That was like a nice seasoning on a comedy. It made the comedy richer, and I was glad to have seen it.
Okay, good. Yes.
Pam's like, you didn't love it enough. I really, really liked it. I laughed a lot.
Well, it's never going to be enough, is it?
Well, I want to shout out to my mum who was listening last weekend and really loved what you said about the film, Pam, and really connected to Barbie as well. And, you know, it'll be great to see, you know, as the weekends go on, if the Barbie fever continues.
I think it really has stretched, you know. Like, everyone that I know has been talking about it, and there's a lot of dialogue online from women mostly, most just like being like crying, you know, and feeling so involved and touched by the movie. So I think the involvement and the reaching into the minds and experiences of women that are seeing this movie is definitely happening across the board and wider than I would have expected to come out publicly.
And a testament to that, and we should note this, is that last Saturday and Sunday were the biggest ever days at the Australian box office. Biggest ever Saturday, the biggest ever Sunday, which is an incredible record. And yep, Oppenheimer deserves, you know, part of that credit because people have flocked to that. But I also think it's sort of basking in the glow of Barbie. People wanted the double. I think Oppenheimer got more of a lift from Barbie than Barbie got a lift from the Oppenheimer heads.
I don't think Barbie needed the step up. Beautiful. All right. So, well, moving on from Barbie, you know, we can't do two episodes on Barbie. I feel like that's maybe too much of a meditation. We've got our first film of the day. We're talking about a new Australian horror movie that's being released by A24. Talk to me. And Tristan, will you talk to me about this movie?
I will talk to you about Talk to Me, which is, it's distributed by A24 Studios, but also Umbrella Entertainment and Maslow Entertainment and Films as well. But it's the directorial debut of Danny and Michael Philippou, who are twin brothers, and I didn't know anything about them, but they have a huge following on YouTube as YouTube creators under the name Raka Raka. So this is their debut film, and I think it's quite different to the things they get up to on YouTube, which definitely seem more extreme and in your face in a way. But not to say that this doesn't get into moments of extremity and being in your face. But these are two twin brothers who were born in Adelaide. They live in LA. This film premiered at the Sundance Film Festival, and then there was a kind of real, like, bidding war that and they definitely made out very well with A24 picking it up, but there's a lot of buzz around this film. I mean, had you heard about this film, Simon, through that whole kind of like Sundance Film Festival premiere?
Yeah, and it kind of jumped into my sphere at that point, and I felt bad because it's so Australian of us to let these great talents or these great films kind of fly by us and then the Americans embrace it. Same thing happened with The Babadook, where The Babadook performed really badly, I think, at the Australian box office and became a sensation because of how America and internationally it was embraced. So it is always great to see these stories. I feel bad, culturally bad that maybe we don't foster the same enthusiasm. Obviously, this is an Australian film. It's been developed by Australian film bodies. But wouldn't it be nice for there to be a grassroots Australian hit that then goes international before we have to wait for the international endorsement to get behind something?
But it'd be interesting to see as well, because I think, I didn't know. Do you know Raka Raka, Pam?
I know who. Yeah.
But I think they have a following. But it's interesting to see this play out and how it will do in the wake of Barbenheimer last week. But it's definitely offering something different as a horror movie. And basically the setup is that it's set in Adelaide. The opening takes us into a house party where a young man attempts to get his withdrawn brother out of his bedroom while this, you know, huge party is going on. And then something very violent happens. And then that's the setup. Pam is already kind of reacting.
Ooh,
I know that you're not a fan of horror films, so I won't get too much into the nitty-gritty detail.
No, I can handle it. It's all right. I've had a coffee this morning. I feel okay.
But it definitely sets the tone of the film. And then we meet the main character of the film, Mia, played by Sophia Wilde, who is not an actor I was familiar with, but they've been in the Stan drama Eden, the BBC series You Don't Know Me. And she's kind of withdrawn, a little bit depressed, not a little bit, on the anniversary of her mother's death, who died 2 years prior. And so she's hanging out with her best friend, Jade. They're teenagers, so they go to high school. She's hanging out with her best friend, Jade, Alexandra Jensen, and her younger brother, Riley, played by Joe Bird. And she's Mia's like an adopted member of this family, which is presided over by the funny, tough love mother, Sue, played by Miranda Otto, probably the biggest name in this cast, who also is an executive producer on this film. Mia also has some history with her friend Jade's boyfriend, Daniel. They used to briefly go out before they got together. So, but they're all kind of friends. They're all having a good time. And she wants to take her mind off this anniversary of her mother's passing. So they decide to hang out with Haley, Zoe Tarakis, and Joss, Chris Alessio, who have been uploading onto social media these videos of them hanging out with people and basically getting into some weird possession territory where you see people with, like, black eyes just going into fits and they're all laughing, having a great time just taking videos of what's going on. Jade is like, that's all fake, it's not real, but they decide to go anyway. And basically it all twists around this high-concept idea of they have this hand. It's an embalmed hand, possibly the hand of a medium or a Satanist.
No.
Oh, no, yeah. And the idea is that you hold the hand, you light a candle to open the door, you hold the hand, and then you say, talk to me, let me in, and you're taken over by a spirit, a force. But it's just funny because it does so in a very teenage way, in that everyone's just like hanging around taking videos and just like having a blast. There's an addictive quality to this game. It's kind of like a drug. So basically they get involved in this kind of seance, this possession, and one thing leads to another. Things do not go well. Maybe you should not have played with the hand of a medium and gotten into possession territory.
It asks a cinematic question. Should you be trying to purposely get possessed by the dead?
Yeah, it feels like a questionable decision. But teenagers make questionable decisions all the time.
Well,
right?
That's the kind of the metaphor here, is that they're kind of like having fun, but just things are taken too far. And I won't get into the spoilers from what happens next, but it is very, you know, it's both unpleasant, tension inducing, and very well acted as well. Like the there's a young cast here who I feel like hopefully in like 5 years or 10 years' time, we'll look back on this film and think, oh, all these stars were in this film. Because I think it's a great cast and well-performed, particularly Sophia
Wilde,
thank you, in the lead is very good, I thought. Now, Simon's also seen this film, so I want to pass to him in a moment to get his impression of this film. But, you know, this is a very well-made horror film. It's got great practical special effects. There's a very grotesque makeup, and the bloody impact of the violence is very visceral. I did like this film. I thought it was quite good. I think some of the hype around it got me a bit too hyped up, maybe. I had too high expectations for the film and kept expecting it to really take flight or really go for it. And maybe I just found it a bit too stop and start. But otherwise, I did think it was good. But I think, Simon, you might have liked this more than I did.
Yeah, I think I did like it a touch more than you based on what you're saying. And I do kind of know where you're coming from. It is a film that it starts really strong, you know, and I don't just mean that opening scene. I think the first half hour, you know, establishing this whole kind of crazy premise and how it gets stuck into it. And it is very tense. The sound design is incredible. The film looks great and there's real inventiveness to the possession scenes. And it is super gory. Like it is surprisingly, even knowing going in that it's a horror movie, I was like, oh, it's really violent. And I think the second half of the film leans quite heavily into the overlying metaphor, you know, the overarching metaphor. And there's a lot of kind of, you know, you say it's an addictive quality, this being possessed. And it is this large sort of drug analogy, I think, you know, that's one way to read it. But what I liked about it was that it was probably a better film than I anticipated. So as the kind of scares wear away or you get used to them and the violence sort of dissipates in the second half to a degree, it just became a stronger drama about depression, about grief, and about addiction, the consequences of making those terrible choices, especially for teenagers who are just trying to feel something and experience something. So the movie I found much richer than I anticipated, but it may not be the balls to the wall horror film from Vertigo that it's being sold as, perhaps.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think I read some comparisons where people were throwing out around The Evil Dead, and maybe it's only because there's like a hand in it, but it's more definitely, you can see why A24 are involved, because it's definitely in the Hereditary, the Babadook, and it's more, more, and it definitely, yeah, it's more, it feels more of a mature film than if you had seen any of these guys' like YouTube videos and their kind of wacky shenanigans. And then, you know, I thought it was going to be more of an ensemble as well. There's some really great characters who sort of just like kind of disappear, but not for any kind of like scary reasons. They just don't hang around. So I thought it would be great to have them more involved.
But save them for the sequel.
Yes. But it sounds like me describing this film to you, Pam, is like I can't imagine you actually sitting down to watch this.
Pam is physically recoiling throughout this entire.
I am. I've got my fists clenched crawled up. No, I think I appreciate the art of being able to make someone feel that stressed out. You know, like the sound design and the like gore that goes into it, but I feel stressed out on a daily basis. I don't need to recreationally feel stressed, but yeah. I appreciate the art and the skill that goes into making someone feel tense in that reactionary sort of situation. So I can definitely appreciate the art that has gone into this, and to back it up with also an excellent dramatic performance is also something that would be brilliant to see. So maybe one day daytime.
And for what it's worth, you know, when I picked up my son after watching the movie yesterday, I was driving home and I was telling him what I did during the day, and I said, "Oh, I saw a scary movie." And he was like, "Why did you watch a scary movie?" And I said, "Oh, well, scary is not the right word. I watched a surprising movie." And I think that applies in a couple of different ways. And it was a film that I really couldn't get a hold of as to where it was going, and I like that element of it as well. Yeah. So, you know, and I don't know, Pam, whether it's the gore for you or whether it's just like the tension is like too much. But I think, you know, if you can, and this goes for anyone listening, like if you can withstand like those initial jarring moments, I do think there's actually quite a rich film here. Not at the height of, but akin to The Babadook.
Yeah, and it's out in cinemas now, so definitely. And apparently the directors, the brothers, they're already signed on to do a new Street Fighter movie, so I think their career will take off in different ways. But yeah, Talk to Me, out in cinemas now.
It's out now, and we're going to talk about another film up next on Movie Squad, so keep it locked. We're on Movie Squad, which is why we're talking about movies. We're talking breakfast, we're talking movies. They go together, just like, you know, eggs and jam. I don't know, something that goes weirdly together. Right, you two live and breathe and almost eat cinema, right? So I've got to come up with a lot of this stuff. So, all right, that love does not only, you know, exist in the breakfast studio in the morning, it also extends outside of here, beyond chatting here on Movie Squad, believe it or not. You can also catch these wonders in person around town. Tristan, you're hosting a screening tonight at Luna.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention this, that, do a series of screenings called Trash Classics, thanks to Luna Cinemas. And it's the last Friday of every month, and tonight is July's turn, and we're screening Tremors, the comedy horror starring Kevin Bacon and Fred Ward. And it'll be a great chance to see it on the big screen. This is a film that I remember taping from Channel 10 and rewatching over and over again, so I'm really looking forward to it. But it's definitely not as intense as something like Talk to Me. It's more of an amiable comedy western with underground worms trying to eat people, but
ew.
Yeah, on tonight. Yes.
But that sounds more approachable for me in terms of something that's a bit gross, you know?
Yeah.
A bit horror. Yeah, so there you go.
Gateway horror, I would say.
Yeah, gateway horror. So if anyone's like me out there and they're feeling like they maybe could dip their toe in the horrible, but they're not feeling quite Talk to Me level yet, this is the way to go. All right, so moving away from Talk to Me, away from horror slightly, Simon, tell us about our second film. We've got Sisu, a new Finnish action movie.
Yes, that's right. It comes from director Jalmari Helander, who I've not seen any of his previous films, but I was aware of him of making the movie Rare Exports, which is about the hunters that trap and kill rogue Santa Clauses. Did you ever see that one, Tristan?
No, I haven't seen that one. Or Big Game, the action film that he did with Samuel L. Jackson as the President of the United States, who goes into... It's like he crash lands in Finland. But they're both available, I think, on SBS On Demand. But he definitely sees like someone who's like... loves genre and genre filmmaking.
Yes, and tongue firmly planted in cheek with all of these. But Sisu is interesting in that it's based on a concept. Pam, are you familiar with the Finnish concept of Sisu?
I have no idea what that means.
No. Well, I thought it was like, I was like going in, I was like, oh, it's someone's name. It's something that, you know. But the opening credits explain that Sisu is basically a way of life, and it's a word that has almost no literal translation in English, but it defines like a stoicism, like a resilience that only the Finnish have. It's basically meaning a level of badassery that you can't even comprehend outside of Finland.
Yeah.
And if you're not Finnish, you don't have it. That's just a fact. And that is bad news in this movie for the Nazis, who in the dying days of World War II, there's this band of disheartened but still very dangerous Nazis with nothing left to lose, who happen upon what looks like an elderly man or an older man. He's a gold miner. His name is Atami Korpi, and he's played by Jorma Tomila. And he's actually discovered some gold nuggets. He's taken them to town to bank them. And he's traveling with his horse, and he's got his gold nuggets. And the Nazis are like, we want that. But what they don't realize is that this is a man you should not trifle with, for he exhibits Sisu. And they have, the Nazis, they've got a caravan of like kidnapped women. They're already Nazis, but they're already like the worst of the worst Nazis. Which means you will most likely delight in the next 90 minutes of this guy who is provoked by the Nazis and then proceeds to viciously murder them one by one, even as they're hunted down, led by the commander, Bruno Heldorf, played by Axel Henny, who people will know from another number of English language films as well. That's kind of it. That's the premise of the movie, but it's also the content of the movie. It is this guy who effectively, and I think someone even says this at one point, he flatly refuses to die. Not only will he not give up the gold, he just cannot be killed, and he just has so much willpower, he will not be leveled by these Nazis and instead will take them out one by one. Now, Tristan, you've seen Sisu as well.
Yeah.
I don't think you were as much of a fan of this film, but I think I have problems with it too. But what I did want to say, Pam, is, and you won't know this, but after every Movie Squad session, Tristan and I do return to our subterranean sort of hub, and we do train our bodies and our minds in the Finnish art of Sisu.
Yes.
So I wanted to know, did you feel like this wasn't authentic enough?
Oh, well, no. Yeah, it's I was going, look, this film, I think it gives you what you want, and it depends if this is what you want. Because, I remember watching the trailer, and the trailer was one of those red brand trailers, like unrated trailers. So you already see the violence in the trailer, so there's no, suspense when you watch the film. But, it was entertaining. I think there was a point where I found it a bit, either repetitive or it's really, there's a lot of Quentin Tarantino vibes in this, and it does feel like someone watched Inglourious Basterds and just was like, well, this is good, but I don't like the dialogue. I don't like the characterization. I just want to watch the action for 90 minutes. And I think that's one of the things that it has, is that it's 90 minutes long. It doesn't outstay its welcome. And it is quite visceral. But it's funny when you were talking about the guy who plays the main character, Jorma Tomila. He is an old guy, but he also looks like a Viking. So there's not a lot of tension. You just know that he can't be killed, and his nickname is the Immortal, so I liked it to a degree, but I didn't I don't know if you're like in 2 weeks time I'll remember anything about this film. What do you think, Simon?
Yes, well, on that note, as I was telling you both, I saw this a few months ago and I was struggling to remember most of it because it is effective. You will score points very easily by making a movie that is 90 minutes of Nazis getting murdered. That's just good theatre. But there's a tedium to it as well. That's the elements that you're saying that are missing. Characterization, sparkling dialogue. It's great to have these sort of, money shots of Nazis being murdered in vicious fashion, but after a while, nothing's really popping, and the tedium kind of sets in. And that's a shame, because it is 90 minutes long. It's well made. But it's got such a low ceiling because of what it's not providing. If I want to see, a bunch of violent, war iconography and Nazis being punished, I'll go play Call of Duty. You know, we kind of look for something additional in cinema, Pam, that you know, I don't think this is quite delivering on as well made as it is. So a little bit disappointing. I do like it more than Tristan, but not by much. Is this something where you go, you know, yes, just before I hit the Antifa rallies, I'm going to go watch Sisu and get in the right mindset?
Look, maybe. I would consider it, but I think that it's got to have that characterization for me. It's got to have, like, a plot that's going to really suck me in for me to want to participate in, like, voluntary, you know, visual terror, you know? It does find me... you consider me interested, but not obsessed. You know,
yeah,
I feel like as we move through the weeks, we can do like you know, stage one. That's like you know, interested, and then 10 is Barbie, right?
Yes, so gotcha. 10 is yeah, we obsessed. Set the yeah. yeah, we got a good like baseline yeah. Experiment in week one.
Absolutely.
So I think there's a type of viewer, and no judgment. There is absolutely a type of audience for Sisu, and they're like, this is exactly what I want. 90 minutes of carnage. Get me out of there after that. But I think, you know, there are just better versions of this that are richer, Inglourious Basterds being, you know, a prime example. But regardless, hey, it's good to have options in the wake of Barbenheimer and we have variety in cinemas once
now,
again.
Now, would you consider yourselves Sisu or, as an alternative option, the Danish culture have Heige, I could be saying this wrong, Heige,
I know this one.
Yeah, this one. And it's a quality of coziness and comfortable conviviality that engenders a feeling of contentment or well-being. So a big Danish culture word that's like, you know, only the Danish could understand exactly how cozy that is. And in the Finnish culture, we've got Sisu, which is I'm a badass. Would you rather be Heige or...
Well,
Sisu.
My wife uses that phrase all the time at home, but Tristan, I've just been training on my body so much, like I can't not be Sisu.
What would you be, Tristan?
Oh, definitely cozy.
I think I'm on your team here, yeah. I think that's the way to go. All right, well, Movie Squad, we'll be back again for another chat all about the cinematic universe. We'll dip into our blockbuster baby's brains. Look at that triple alliteration. I'm so good at my job. We'll be back next week on Movie Squad. Thanks, Tristan and Simon.
Thank you.
So there you go. It was a great episode. Great to chat with Pam about both these films. And definitely, yeah, in the studio, Pam had a very visceral reaction to us. To us just like talking about not even the nitty-gritty, the real hellacious stuff that happens in Talk to Me. But it's definitely a film that has quite an impact. But it's also got that sense of... Just that, you know, I compare it to Hereditary because it has that sense, without giving spoilers, of like, the irreversible tragedy or the kind of like the thing that happens that you can't hide from your parents that is just like too awful to comprehend. It just has that kind of, I think it taps to fears of maybe that teenage sense of just like, there's no going back after this. Yeah.
I think it's an important distinction as well, though, like Hereditary goes all the way with that concept.
Yeah.
But that is the absolute gut-churniest version of that film. Talk to Me, it explores that area, but it still is fun.
Yes.
And I think it gives itself enough of a, we'll call it an escape route, right? So you kind of, you get to dig into these hard, you know, concepts, but you kind of are allowed out at the end of it.
Yeah.
I don't think Hereditary ever lets you out.
No, it's all a matter of degrees, which is something we were just talking about with a post-review discussion of Sisu. And, you know, I guess I didn't enjoy it as much as you did, but I think we're still in the same... It's not like
it's a three-star for me, 2.5 for you, you know. Like, I think we both were disappointed by it. I was able to at least, I guess, relish the pleasures it offered.
Yeah.
But I think we're actually pretty aligned on it, frankly. I think we both found it a bit tedious.
Yeah, it made me think while watching it, just, you know, sometimes the, you know, what works for one person, and it comes down to a matter of degrees and sometimes choices where... you know, the things that I was kind of finding a bit trying with the film, just the kind of, you know, that it was, there was not a lot of characterization or sort of, it was more just like violence, action, and not much else, particularly with this kind of silent protagonist. But, I mean, some of these could be charged at a film that I really enjoyed this year, John Wick 4, and it's definitely much shorter than John Wick 4. But, you know, I was thinking about it during watching it, why I prefer... something like John Wick 4, which I'm sure anyone else would just think is mindless video game-styled action. But I guess, yeah, things like the lead character, I think I've already talked about it, but with John Wick, it's a weird irony that this guy is pretty much like, you know, immortal. He is not been killed, well, you know, throughout these movies by like thousands of assassins. But because it's Keanu Reeves, I still feel like, you know, he has this quality as an actor where you still feel like, oh, he's going through it, or there's, you know, he's wounded. I'm not sure if he'll make the next stage of this like video game. Like there's something that you connect with. Well, for me anyway, as an audience member,
I think it's also also point out that you earn that over four films,
yes,
and
yeah.
10 hours of material effectively. And the other part of it is, compared to Sisu, you know, Sisu to me felt like it had, you know, two speeds: fast forward and stop.
sure.
Whereas John Wick has progression to it; it has pace to it. I think those films are actually well made. And when we talk about characterization and dialogue, we don't need it to be absolutely sparkling. It doesn't need to be hugely stylized dialogue. We don't need to have, you know, we don't need to know all the backstories of every character. That's not what we're talking about here. But there's some element of texture, I think, to the John Wick films and other films like this that we enjoy. Even the Raid films, you know, which are heavily inspired or influenced John Wick. But Sisu just lacks that texture and it lacks that pacing. And so what you're left with is like hardcore violence, and now I can just, you know, now you've got to wait a few minutes effectively.
And it definitely, like, with the kind of the use of the sort of spaghetti Western style music at times, and the even with the chapter headings when it kind of goes, thump, and then it's like the kind of very Tarantino styled comic book feeling. Like some parts of me were thinking, even though it gets pretty over the top and ridiculous by the end of the movie, I was like, maybe it could have lent into it more. Maybe it's just the fact that everything looks quite grey and muddy that kind of adds to the feeling of like repetitiveness. But like, yeah, I still enjoyed it to a point, and you know, yeah, I mean, hopefully maybe catch up with the director's previous films, Rare Exports and Big Game. But it also made me think of, like, you know, yeah, sometimes with action films, I remember as a teenager, you just be like, I just want the good parts. I don't, you know, as you're saying, stop or fast forward, I don't want the talking or the dialogue. I just want the action. And, you know, how cinema has progressed, where we've got those stunt people in charge of these movies and making these kind of, like, you know, ongoing, long-form, intense action sequences, but then realizing, oh, the things that sometimes make a work really memorable to me are the kind of the table setting, are the kind of like the pacing and letting things kind of breathe or giving you stakes. I always think of like a film that's not like great, but or I always think of fondly is the Jason Statham movie Safe, which takes its time setting up. You know, he basically has to protect a young girl in New York from, like, gangsters or assassins. But it takes its time to set up, and by the time it gets to the point where they meet and he has to protect her, I felt invested as a viewer. Mm. Whereas this, yeah, I don't know. Anyway, but it's, I feel a little, still a bit mixed of it. The opening also does remind me of the Tom Waits segment from the Ballad of Buster Scruggs.
Yes, the Coen Brothers film.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely, but also not as cinematically interesting.
Yeah.
Look, I'll say one more unkind thing and then a kind thing, and the unkind thing is that I feel like it's kind of what you're talking about. Like, it feels like it wants to be a spaghetti Western, but it's set in Finland, set during World War II. But it's a pastiche of a pastiche. It's like he didn't, you know, the director is maybe not as indebted to those films, the Sergio Leone films, and even the really rough and ready spaghetti Westerns, as much as indebted to Quentin Tarantino or modern versions of that. So it felt like a retread of a retread, and that didn't really resonate as a true throwback. The kind thing is, look, in 10, 20 years' time, someone's going to find this movie and go, this is amazing.
Yeah.
Why have I never heard of this?
Yeah.
It is this lost gem, or maybe not even lost gem, but it's this gem. It's the kind of thing you might even play at a Trash Classics in the future, Tristan. And I think it fulfills that surprise. Like, I can see people discovering it and wanting to own it as a thing that wasn't, you know, it's not Barbenheimer, right? It's not going to be seen by 100 million people. But still, I do think there are thresholds that even those films that we now look back on fondly, they cross them, and this one still kind of doesn't.
And then, you know, just to wrap it back, you know, with the Philippou brothers and Talk to Me, you were talking about Sisu as kind of like, you know, it's a homage to a homage. And it feels like with Talk to Me as a film, you know, there's definitely echoes of other horror films and ones that, you know, we've compared it to and others that we haven't mentioned. But it definitely feels like they have added something either new to it, or even, as you were saying, like, even if the horror flags a little bit in the second half, you're still engaged with the characters.
You're like in now. Yeah, exactly.
And that, like, it still has qualities where, like, it feels, like, very classical as a horror film. It, you know, it felt to me like a, you know, a classic Stephen King story, like Pet Sematary, less about the kind of the specifics of, like, raising pets from the dead, but that just sense of, like, someone walking into, like, a tragedy that's not going to, like, you know, be resolved easily.
That's
you know?
A great comparison. Yeah. Pet Sematary, Stephen King always calls that his scariest novel, and it's his... Was it his first novel?
Not his first.
Second after Carrie, right?
It's definitely, I think, a bit later in his career, but, like, one that he has, I guess, held on to. And because, yeah, there is something quite grim and bleak about it. It doesn't quite, you know, like there's no easy escape route to the characters.
It's harrowing, but not for the horror. You know, it's my favorite of his novels, but it is so grim and almost cruel to a degree.
Yes,
but that's kind of what stays with you. And I think Talk to Me is not as cruel, obviously. But that's the thing that resonates beyond the visceral violence.
Yeah, and so definitely a little bit different to maybe what I expected going in. But hopefully, the next time I see this, maybe... that's always, you know, another issue sometimes, the expectations to things, the hype to things. And maybe when you see a film on your own terms, you can see it a bit more clearly and appreciate it. So I hope that happens the next time I see Talk to Me. But yeah, it was great talking about these two films, which definitely offer different cinematic pleasures than Barbie or Oppenheimer, and that there is room at the table, hopefully, and we'll see as the box office continues this weekend, for these smaller films that offer more genre kind of entertainment value for the punters.
Absolutely. Something for everyone. We've seen all four. Why can't you?
Yes, that's right.
Tristan, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And we'll catch you on the next episode of the Movie Squad podcast.